Taking Stock with Pim Fox and Carol Masser. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Well, there are certainly a lot of companies taking on a lot of other companies in terms of deals. In fact, the value of takeovers announced in 2014 hitting the $1 trillion mark today. So let's talk a little bit more about that. We've got Jeffrey McCracken. He's managing editor of Global Deals for us right here at Bloomberg News. Also on the phone in New York is Joel Stern. He's chairman, chief executive officer at Stern Value Management. Jeff, this is what you guys do day in and day out. There have been a flurry of deals. Is it an M&A boom that's just going on? A lot of companies having cash, or is there something else going on?
I think a combination of factors have finally all come to a head. Companies have been sitting on billions, trillions of dollars of cash. Companies have been largely rewarded by their investors when they do what they think are transformative deals. It seems like something's changed at the C-suite level and at the board level, where previously it had been a red light. So even though there was the wind at their back to do transactions, they now seem to be willing to go forward. And it's just the dam really has broken. And where we're seeing it most furiously, if you will, is in the pharmaceutical space, and especially in the space of people looking to avoid their U.S. taxes and domicile in another country.
Joel Stern, I'm wondering if you could come in on this and the topic specifically of using money that is in overseas accounts to purchase overseas assets. Will this spur the U.S. Congress to change the tax code?
If it doesn't, we ought to elect new people, that's for sure. It doesn't make any sense to me. It cannot make much sense to anybody else that companies are being subsidized by other people in society in order to do transactions. That doesn't make any sense. But there's a different problem, though. I come at this from a different vantage point, and that is the temptation to overpay on deals. Incidentally, it is in management's interest always to do transactions, even if they overpay, because their direct remuneration is a function of the size of what they manage. No deal is a bad deal to management unless it causes bankruptcy or it is so blatant that there's an unfriendly takeover that takes place.
I mean, Jeff,
Let me
bring in Jeff, though, because, I mean, Jeff, we've talked. I mean, there's been a fair amount of deals that we've seen this year that we say are pretty strategic, and that you see not only the target going up, which is pretty normal, but you see the acquirer also going up because investors say this makes sense.
Right. Last week, Zimmer bought a company called Biomet, and their shares popped like 16%. So it's not just – his point is valid that a lot of times there is incentive for management to try to make the company bigger. But it's interesting how much the investor base seems to be rewarding these companies. It used to be the norm was only that the target shares popped on the day of announcement. Now, increasingly, over and over – I mean, look at Valiant. Go back to the Valiant-Ackman deal. Valiant shares are up and up and up since they announced that.
Well, there is – sorry, may I just say something about that?
Please.
The first research on this across the board – I'm talking about gigantic samples. I'm not talking about just one deal at a time – was done by the late Professor James Laurie at the University of Chicago. He was the fellow who founded the Center for Research in Security Prices. And what he found – he wrote a book called The Stock Market, Theories and Evidence. And he showed that, unfortunately, because there is a competitive market by buyers – for the limited amount of sellers, there is a bidding contest that takes place, and unfortunately, almost all of the so-called synergistic benefits are transferred to the seller. It is very rare that buyers are big winners on things like this, and you can just see it. Look what just happened with GE's announcement. The next thing you know, Siemens is in there. It is in the interest of the seller to try to have more than one bidder, and when that starts to take place, it looks like a good deal. From a strategic standpoint, the question always remains, what is the ROI? Will the return on investment be sufficient to justify the price that's being paid?
Jeff McCracken, can you come in on the idea that while these deals may in some way be connected to the tax structure, they still have to be sold to the shareholders of the acquiring company, correct?
Right, right. And the tax code by itself won't do it for you. In the case of, for example, General Electric, they do have tens of billions of dollars in offshore cash. And that helps justify, I think, the Alstom transaction they're seeking. But they also see in the company an opportunity to expand in an energy space, which is something they've been talking about wanting to do. They also feel like Alstom has several hundred million dollars they can take out in costs, which quickly flow to the bottom line at GE. So it can't be just about a tax play. That is a benefit. It's, I think, sometimes what puts these deals over top. What I really find interesting is the Pfizer deal, because I see that as the most cynical M&A transaction ever. Basically, they're banking on, I feel, that DC will not do anything. That even though this is a major company, a very well-known U.S. company, they can go and do this. They can go and domicile somewhere else. There'll be a lot of heat and there'll be a lot of noise, but at the end, the parties will not come together and close this loophole. And what's interesting is who comes after Pfizer? If Pfizer can do it at their size, who's not too big?
Well, that's a good point, Jeff. Do you anticipate that if they're able to do this, that you'll start to see a flurry of deals kind of following in suit in terms of what Pfizer's doing and getting kind of that tax benefit by going overseas?
The thought in the deal community, so among the lawyers and the bankers and the people that finance the transactions, they had always assumed that someone like Pfizer was too big.
Right.
But if Pfizer gets done, then everyone's eyes will open. There are countries that go around right now and meet with law firms here in the United States, big law firms, and they say, you ought to pitch your client on coming and domiciling with us. So that was already in the works, and that was before Pfizer. If Pfizer gets done, then they're the base of what can get done.
Joel Stern, let's just set aside the shareholders of Pfizer and AstraZeneca for just a moment. What about the customers, the patients? Is a deal like this, is this good for medical science and research?
Any deal that creates sustainable value is good for everybody. Because it creates additional employment, it creates additional investment in research and development, and I believe that the funding cost for Pfizer would be a heck of a lot less than it would be for AstraZeneca, so that there are real benefits here all the way around. As I said before, however, the big question is how much you pay in order to do the deal. Keep in mind that their advisors have their fees directly proportional to the price that's paid, so they're in no hurry to convince management that they might be overpaying. Okay, that we have to be careful about what kind of advice they might be getting on that focus. But what I would say to you is this: they must decide what the performance must look like at every level of price that they could pay, and only then can they make the judgment that they're reaching the point where they have to drop out of the deal. And unfortunately, very few managements want to drop out once they've committed themselves, especially in public, to doing the transaction. So there are a lot of forces here operating from both their advisors, from the management team that want size on the one side, and of course, if there are benefits, the benefits will be there no matter what the price is that's paid. But the question is, from a shareholder standpoint, is it worth the deal? I believe that it's a deal like this is beneficial to society as a whole, because of the argument I made earlier. The R&D, the lower cost of capital for Pfizer, and also the idea that they're likely to increase the size of the employment level as they make these investments over time. So it's good for them.
To Joel's point, there is a certain momentum to transactions. The deal momentum, or there's the deal machine, sometimes people will joke about, and it's the lawyers and it's the bankers and it's the shareholders, especially the arbitrage community, that will jump into a transaction and they will push a company to sell itself or push a company to go an extra dollar to buy somebody. So there is momentum, and to what extent sometimes that's ego, you wonder too. If you're a CEO and you're out there publicly pursuing somebody, are you willing to walk away? You know, we're going to see the situation with GE. Is Jeff Immelt, if Siemens ponies up, and if it looks like the French government wants Siemens to get involved, would Jeff Immelt fold his cards before he, you know, ever really got going on what would have been GE's largest deal?
Jeff, what about though with Pfizer specifically? So this is their second run, right, at AstraZeneca. From what I understand, they really haven't been talking at this point, and that the thinking is Pfizer's kind of taking this publicly to kind of make this deal happen. How far do you think they are willing to go?
It's clear they're willing to go pretty far. They were rebuffed 3 months ago, and then they've come back at a pretty high price. They're up another 10% in their offer, at least from where they were 3 months ago.
Why are they going public with this?
They feel like AstraZeneca wasn't even willing to give them a hearing, wasn't even really willing to have a conversation. So you try to create leverage. And if you can get enough of your shareholders, I'm sorry, enough of the other side shareholders out there pressing for a deal, or at least pressing to have a conversation, then you create some momentum. And I think the other thing with Pfizer is they're going to have, I believe it's next week, they have their earnings. So now they've got this trial balloon out there. Let's see. Now they'll have an opportunity to see what their shareholders think of the transaction.
You guys study these deals inside and out. I mean, I'm just curious, you know, Jeff, over the years, over the decades, I mean, I remember seeing research that says most of these deals never pay off for shareholders. Is that still kind of the case?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to look at the more recent vintage. It anecdotally, and so this isn't based on intensive research, but anecdotally, it seems like the bigger deals are the ones that are more likely to blow up on people. I had someone that I trust once, someone in the deal legal community, say he had done a number of deals with his clients, and the ones where the client was spending roughly 10 to 20% of their market cap were inevitably the ones that worked out best. It was manageable. They could get their arms around it. They could tuck it in without it overwhelming the whole management team.
Great stuff. Jeff, as always, thank you so much. Jeff McCracken, he's managing editor of Global Deals for Bloomberg News. He and his team have been pretty busy over the last few weeks. And our thanks also to Joel Stern, chairman, chief executive officer at Stern Value Management, joining us here on Taking Stock on Bloomberg Radio.
Taking Stock, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.